name's Mandy, and I'm the local RNLI Water Safety Officer, as well as being crew at Wells Lifeboat Station on both of the boats that we have there. This series of podcasts is designed to try to share local water safety knowledge, so to help you enjoy this local coastline whilst keeping yourselves that little bit safer. So this morning I'm in Brancaster Staithe Harbour, and I'm with the Harbour Master, Mike Parker, who's been the Harbour Master here for 4 years. Mike's employed by the National Trust, who are the current custodians of the harbour. Mike's an RYA, so Royal Yachting Association, senior instructor, both for dinghy, safety boat and power boat. And he's been a key principal in sailing club training centres for adults, children and for people with disability issues. So let's start by chatting to Mike. Right, so, hi. So I'm here with Mike Parker this morning. Morning, Mike.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. So, in terms of Brancaster Staithe, you're the Harbour Master at Brancaster Staithe. So what does the Harbour Master actually do in Brancaster Staithe?
Lots of things that you discover as you go along. However, mainly is just to ensure that the users have a great time on the water, but they do it in a safe way, and that we ensure that everybody doesn't get in everybody else's way.
Okay, so you're offering advice?
Yes, so...
And also, can you stop people going in the water if you think they're unsafe, or is it more an advisory capacity?
It's an advisory capacity.
Oh, okay.
We can't, although we can be persuasive sometimes. So when we've had the big winds the other day, and you've got people turning up to go paddleboarding in 30-mile-an-hour winds, we forcefully dissuade them. Otherwise, you guys in the lifeboat would be getting busier and busier.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. We really appreciate your efforts on that department. That's brilliant. So why would people come to Brancaster Staithe? Why is it so popular?
It's a beautiful part of the country. It's in the middle of Hunstanton and Wells, so people can get here from all directions along the coast. It's one of three harbours that you can launch from. Burnham Overy tends to be more suitable for smaller craft. Here they can launch speedboats and yachts.
Okay,
so we've
much
got,
bigger boats.
So we've got up to 35-foot yachts in the harbour, right down to people turning up with little inflatables that they bought from Lidl last week.
So you've got the whole range?
Yes.
Which I imagine brings its challenges.
Yeah, so the key one is people understanding other people's enjoyment. So ensuring that they don't get in each other's way. So we've got two areas for water skiing. So what we don't want is kayaks and paddleboarders in the middle of a water skiing area, because that could cause an incident straight away.
Definitely.
So it's about educating people and then creating safe areas of segregation for when people come to do their sport.
For the different activities.
Yeah.
Right, okay, that's lovely. So what sort of advice are you giving... Are you finding yourself having to give regularly to people that come, either that come regularly or infrequently to Brancaster?
So, believe it or not, from how to reverse a trailer
with their
motorboats on, launching, because we're quite restricted on where we've got to launch, so we need people to launch and get out the way.
Yes, yes.
So, and about, you know, perhaps sometimes a little bit of politeness from the users just to move around so the next one can get in.
Yes, we did do a previous podcast on slipway etiquette and how to get on and off quickly. So it's important here as it is in Wells, Burnham, Overy, at Mawston and Lakemead.
Every slipway you go to in the country will be the same. If a new user turns up, invariably they'll be seeking advice. We just check that they've got valid third-party insurance in line with our terms and conditions. We can very quickly assess their capability. And we just try and make sure they've got a little bit of local knowledge. So what we suggest is if they're here for the week, that they actually walk the channel at low tide so that they know exactly where it is, so that if they're coming back in, they're not running aground.
Yeah, no, that's really good advice, walking it at low tide. Obviously, knowing when the tides are so they don't get cut off by the tide whilst they're doing that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's really good advice.
And then we have a lot of people now launching kayaks, inflatables and SUPs. We've got a kayak hire business, and we've got SUP hire that both do guided trips. So if we get novices arrived, then sometimes we might guide them in their direction just to give them some local knowledge and show them the proper techniques and the right equipment. Because invariably people turn by a paddleboard and they haven't got buoyancy aid, they don't understand what the leash is, or the leash is inappropriate for here because it's an ankle leash, not a waist leash.
Yes.
So we can do a little bit of education with our partners here in the harbour as well. And they're friendly. They'll help them. They will lend them a buoyancy aid for the first time.
Yeah, you know, that's really good. So, again, Brancaster Staithe, it appears to be the same as a lot of the other harbours where we go and we see paddle boards, people turning up with paddle boards. They're so easy to get hold of now, and people don't necessarily understand the risks associated with paddle boarding, and they turn up with incomplete kit. And it's brilliant that here you've got partners that can highlight, you know, what the proper practices are and what the best gear to have is.
Yeah, and then the other thing that we do is, one of the things to launch from here, you must have third-party liability insurance. So what we probably recommend paddle boarders and paddlers do is actually join UK Paddle Sport, which used to be British Canoeing, because with your membership,
right, yes,
it's £35 a year, and you get third-party liability covering included in your membership.
Oh, okay. So is that peculiar to Brancaster Staithe, or is that wider?
That's countrywide. I know that if you launch on the canals, they expect you to have a. And that's why the Canals and River Trust work with UK Paddle Sport, what was British Canoeing, to ensure that people have got some insurance.
That's a really good thing, because I think a lot of people, that you've bought your paddle board and don't necessarily think about having insurance. So that's a really useful piece of advice about the insurance. Yeah. Lovely.
So we go through that, and then we try and point people in the right direction to get to the right area. And that probably takes most of our time when we're at the launch phase. Because we've got a four-hour window, so you've got 2 hours before high tide and 2 hours after. Normally, by the time high tide arrives, the pressure is off on the hard.
Yes.
There's nowhere to park, but the pressure is off.
Yes, because everybody that's going to go has gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, because obviously the harbour here goes completely dry.
Yeah.
After low water.
Yeah. So we do that. We go out, and then we'll try and get on the water if we can, and just go and sit in a place where, just really, just to encourage people in the faster boats to behave themselves when they're crossing through some of the speed restricted areas, because we get a lot of complaints from people on the yachts and from the fishermen, that if people go tearing through the moorings too fast, they're creating such a wake. It's not about speed; it's about wake.
Yes.
And that, you know, somebody can be sat in their boat having a cup of tea, and the next minute they're wearing it.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And we have done a number of previous posts requested by Blakeney Harbour Association about the fact that, you know, if you are creating a significant wake as you're going through moored boats, if people are transferring between maybe their tender onto a bigger boat, as the wake hits them, you're increasing the risk of somebody falling into the water, and therefore increasing their risk of potentially drowning if the wake hits them. So it's exactly the same here with the moored boats, and people being what are called wake aware.
So one of the things we've done this year, the Harbour Association, that unfortunately has now disbanded, they funded new signs near the launch point that remind people it's not just about the speed, but watch your wash.
Yeah, so that's our, perfect, yes.
That's our watch your wash. So we're trying to get people to do that this year.
Yeah.
One thing at a time. We've got them wearing buoyancy aids. We've got them using their kill
Brilliant.
Cords. So we're
Brilliant.
Trying to get them. And then I've got to think about what we'll focus on next year if we get this right.
So because you've been successful with buoyancy aids and kill cords, as you've just said, what was your tactic for that?
Education. I got stickers from the RYA and the Coast Guard, and actually gave them to people for their boats, so they could actually put it on to remind them.
Yeah.
And then during launch, while we're there, all the harbour team, if they see somebody without a kill cord on, they'll say, "Just pop your kill cord on."
Right, that's lovely. So you've got sort of vigilance as well as a reminder with a nice sticker.
We
try
to do it in a nice way, but some people get affronted by it and say, "I'll do it later." We say, "No, kill cord first." Then
do it now. Yeah.
So that kill cord is a bugbear, because a lot of people forget to put them on, and then that just makes you, then as a powerboat instructor, I'm thinking, what's your level of competence?
Yes.
Because you've not put that on.
I see. So you're using that as a gauge for level of competence.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Yes,
and
that makes
awareness.
Sense. Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, people come down with their families, and I understand they're trying to get their families in the boat, they're trying to make sure they're all putting their gear on, they're sitting in the right place, they're getting it balanced and trimmed up, that's fine. And then they've probably forgotten that at the last minute, but we'll remind them in a nice way.
That's brilliant. Just you talking there about people getting themselves into their boat and all their gear and everything, what do you find the awareness is of people with the boats that, the loads that the boats are designed to take?
Right. People's, not a lot, but a few, overload their boats. And we just keep saying to them, there's a sea plate in the back of your boat.
Yes.
And it'll say the maximum number of people that boat's designed for. I mean, you can see straight away, but we had an instance at the weekend where someone was trying to put seven adults in a boat designed for three.
Oh, my word.
You can see just by looking at it.
Yes. Yes, there's a common sense element there.
And then we have a discussion with the owner to try and get them to balance it up and make a trip and come back.
So when you're talking to people about the fact that their boat's overloaded, are they aware of the fact that they're massively increasing their risk of capsize?
Well, they're not aware of that, because the thing is that you only got to get somebody to go fast making a wash.
Yes.
And that's going to end in tears, or you're going to end up with a early bath. And then the other issue for us, really, is that there now as a helm, you've voided your insurance because you've overloaded your boat.
Good point,
so that's the thing that we keep saying to them. It's a condition of here that you have insurance.
Yes.
If you overload your boat, your insurance company are going to say, oh, yeah, you had a capsize, but look, you had too many people in the boat. You've overloaded it. And with the law change back in March last year, you know, helms are now held more responsible.
So okay, just tell us a little bit about law change last year.
So there was a law that went through last year that, but they had issues with people on jet skis.
Yes.
And they had instances where people in jet skis had been having accidents, and it was very difficult to make them accountable in the court of law.
Yeah.
So they tightened up that any boat with a motor now, whoever is on the helm is responsible.
Fair enough.
Full stop.
Yeah.
You know, not it's my mate,
no.
I was lent it. You're on the helm, you are responsible.
Okay. Okay. No, that's good. That's a very clear rule. Some of them are more convoluted, but that's very clear. That's lovely. So in terms of, I hear all the time about what I call informal rescues. So where something's gone wrong and the lifeboat haven't been called, but people like yourself and others are actually rescuing people that the lifeboat may have had to come out to rescue. Have you got any examples of those?
So 2 weeks ago, it was quite windy. A family took a sailing dinghy designed for three people with three adults and three children. They did go up the creek, not out to sea.
So they had six people, even though the boat was designed for three.
They didn't put it under sail power, they put it under motor power.
Right.
They hadn't taken their tiller or anything with them.
Right.
And they got halfway up the creek and the wind picked up, the engine cut, they couldn't start it, and they ended up washed up onto the marsh.
Okay.
So it was an easy rescue in some respects.
Yeah.
Because I wasn't bothered about the boat. I just left the boat, and they wanted me to sort the boat out.
Yes.
But we were able to walk them across the marsh.
Okay.
And then they had a 2-mile walk to the golf club. But, you know, they were safe then.
Yes.
And then, fortunately, one of the local boatyards was able to help me recover the boat a bit later on.
Oh, okay, that's helpful.
But they were members of the sailing club, you know, and the sailing club have sort of reprimanded them as well a little bit about what they did.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So we had that, and then people had breakdowns. We had two engine breakdowns at the weekend.
Okay.
So we recovered one. Another boat in the harbour recovered the other, and then we get them into the harbour.
So with engine breakdowns. From the RNLI perspective, the number one reason for a call-out of that sort of nature is because of mechanical issues. Is it because people are not having their engines serviced, or is it the fuel situation where people are using high ethanol content in their fuel, or is it more complex than that?
I think it sometimes... One was down to poor maintenance.
Okay.
A battery was really badly corroded.
Yeah, which happens in salt water especially.
And then another one, they'd had an electrical fault on the engine. So
no fuel issue.
No, it was electrical fault. And I think something had popped on the end, you know, I think according to the engineer, the rectifier had gone, well, okay, I'll take their word on that. And yeah. That's, so things can go wrong.
Yes.
But what surprised me is they hadn't got alternative methods of propulsion with them. So again, that's back to RIA level two,
yeah.
Is going out and being prepared.
Yes.
So, you know, we always take a set of paddles in the rib. We've always got oars on the tender. Yeah. Plus a little motor if we've got the motor on, so we can always get ourselves back if the engine goes.
Yeah.
Neil, my colleague, yesterday, I wasn't on duty yesterday, so Neil had to go and rescue somebody that had run aground, and they'd knocked the propeller off one of these electric.
Oh, right, yes, electric outboard.
So they'd lost their prop, so they couldn't get back, but they hadn't got alternative propulsion with them. And it's quite a breezy day, and there was nobody else out in the harbour.
Oh, so they could have been stuck there for a while if he hadn't been available.
To some degrees, the harbour's quite safe in that respect, because you just sit where you are, it will dry out, and you can walk back.
Yes.
Which is what we call the walk of shame. So, and it's happened to us all.
Yes, yes. I mean, that's inconvenient, but as you say, yeah. At least people are safe, and then presumably you go back on the next tide and try and sort it out.
Go and recover your boat if you've managed to put an anchor in it.
Yes.
So it's about... So motorboaters, for me, it's about making sure they've got an anchor in it with a long enough cut rope and chain on it.
Yes, absolutely, and they get it out straight away.
It's about taking some alternative propulsion, paddles or an oar, if the boat's designed to tell you that. And then the last thing is a mobile phone in a waterproof case, because the amount of people that don't go out there, and I know you've helped us and we've done some education, so people that we find that are going out without a waterproof case, we'll either lend them or give one and remind them to give a good donation to the RNLI.
Yeah, the means of calling for help is key.
Yeah.
Because if you can't rely on people watching out for you all the time.
No, not at all. You know, the minute you've gone through the moorings here, we can't see you.
Yes.
So if you're out, once you go around the corner,
yeah.
We're not. We are lucky. So Natural England have got a hut on the island.
Yes.
And we work very closely with them on a number of things. But their warden's pretty good, and that, you know, he's got a strong pair of binoculars.
Yes.
And Neil will always let us know if there's something
stuck,
or there's something untoward going in, or dare I say, we've got unwanted craft. So, for example, jet skis aren't permitted in the harbour, so they will let us know that a jet ski's coming.
Oh, that's perfect.
And then
yes.
we'll go out and just remind them that they're not, you know, nice to see you, but unfortunately they're not permitted in the harbour.
Yeah.
So we try and work with everybody.
Yeah, no, it's all about collaborations and working together and sharing the messaging.
Mm.
That's great. So buoyancy aid you've been successful with.
Reasonably. There's still a long way to go. But
I think that's true everywhere.
But some people are just so belligerent, and I can't believe they're going on the water. I really can't believe they're going on the water. You know, I'm a canoeist, a paddleboarder, a dinghy sailor, powerboater. I would always wear my buoyancy aid or my life jacket on my boat all the time.
Yeah.
Because I've only got to fall off and bash my head.
Yeah, well, even if you don't bash your head, you know, we're all affected by cold water shock.
Yeah.
And if your mouth happens to be under the water when you take that gasp from cold water shock, it's only going to go in one place. Mm-hmm. And that's how drowning starts.
Yeah.
At least if you've got a flotation device on, be it a buoyancy aid or a life jacket, when you take that gasp, you've got a much higher chance of your mouth being in air.
Yeah.
You know, and also I think having a buoyancy aid or a life jacket on, if you do unexpectedly fall into the water, it gives you a few seconds to get yourself sorted out and mentally realise what's happened without having to do very much. You know, it's keeping you afloat.
And we all do it. Sometimes I'm in a rush to get out,
mm-hmm.
and I get down there and think, oh, I've left my jacket behind. But
yeah.
I won't carry on. I'll stop, come back and get it. Because at the end of the day, I can't help anybody if I'm bobbing about in the water.
No, absolutely, absolutely.
And it's about wearing the right, appropriate buoyancy aid or life jacket for what you're doing.
Yes.
Because if I'm likely to go in the water, an inflating life jacket is not the thing
to
wear.
No, exactly.
You know, I need to be wearing a buoyancy aid at that point. So it's about just working out and identifying what tasks you're doing, or do you think, you know, if I'm going out to a dinghy, I might be getting wet here, so I'll, you know, if it's inverted. Because what can happen here is sailing dinghies can get stuck in the mud. So although the sailing club are great here, and when they're racing, they've got ample safety support.
Yes.
we have people that come down during the week that just launch themselves.
Yes.
And it's when they're on their own that they have a problem.
Mm.
And it might be parents out with a youngster. We had an instance the other week where a topper had got inverted near the beach. And they and it had masted stuck in the sand.
And the mud are right along this coastline, actually. Yeah. Once you're stuck in it, it's a bit of a job to get out.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to have cleaned it afterwards.
No. No, it sticks to everything. Yeah. Is there anything else that you'd like to sort of share with us about little safety tips for Brancaster Staithe, or, you know, things that you come across that it would be good if people, you know, learned and changed their behaviour slightly?
Yeah. So, should we say with some of the more newer boaters and mm-hmm. paddleboarders is actually to look at a tide timetable.
Lovely,
and understand
yes.
when the tides are.
Yeah.
The next thing is have a look at the weather forecast the night before.
Yeah.
Because for paddleboarding, if it's above 10, 12 miles an hour,
yes.
go and do something else.
Yeah.
The amount of people that we have turning up here, we understand why, but they've not checked the weather forecast. So they don't even know that it's blowing offshore.
Yeah.
So on the weekend, we had a lot of families here with paddleboards, and it was an ideal tide for them. But the wind was blowing. So as the tide goes out, the wind was with the tide.
Yes.
So I'm trying to explain to them, you can't go there. You need to be up so that you drift into the hard.
Yeah, yeah. If you're going against the tide and against the wind, paddleboarding, that's really hard work. And obviously, if you're stood up,
yeah.
you're just like act like a huge sail, don't you? Paddleboards are way more affected by the wind than kayaks, as an example, where you're much lower down.
Yeah.
But it is a real issue with paddleboards, especially the pump up.
Yes,
you know, the inflatable type
yeah.
of. They're really affected by the wind.
Yeah, and then the other on talking about pump up, we've had a lot of inflatables appear this year.
Okay,
so
kayaks and paddleboards.
Kayaks, you know, the big bulbous kayaks.
Yes,
that aren't quite toys, but aren't far from it.
Yeah.
And, people are launching, and they have no idea about what is involved and going on in the water. It's great that they want to come down and try it.
Yes.
And, you know, as the National Trust, we encourage everybody that wants to come and use the harbour to use it. But sometimes the safety point of view, you know, when you've got families putting kids in those with no buoyancy aid on, we will go and have a word, and
yes.
if we can, if the kayak hire or the SUP hire are here, we'll get them to lend them a buoyancy aid.
Yeah. Yeah, and those inflatable kayaks and paddleboards, because they're so light compared
just
to
get
the
blown
heavy ones,
get blown all over the place.
Yeah.
So one of the things we say for people, because what's a popular thing to do here in a kayak and a paddleboard is on a big tide above 8.3 metres, is to launch from here with the tide behind you, paddle down to the road, take your selfie as you paddle along the Brancaster Beach Road by the 30-mile-an-hour side.
Oh, I see, OK.
And then come back,
right.
which is a great trip. I do it.
Yeah,
you know, I'm
yeah.
sure everybody else does it. But one of the things we say to them, if the wind, you know, if it's a westerly wind, we say aim for the glass. You know, don't go where the waves are.
Yeah.
Aim for the glassy bits of water.
Yeah, where it's calm.
Yeah. So, because a lot of it's hard work. No, aim for the glass. Aim
yeah.
for the glass. So, but yeah.
yeah.
So we try to do that. So check the tide, check the weather, and really just make sure your equipment's up to date. If it doesn't look right, it's not right.
Yeah. So in terms of tides, you're looking at Brancaster Staithe tide time, and what are you recommending with, say, for people on paddle boards and kayaks?
An hour before high tide.
Yeah.
And that'll give you plenty of time to get up to the road or to explore the creeks.
Yeah.
And then the tide will turn and it'll bring you back again.
Okay. Okay, yeah. so getting in there an hour before
yeah.
high tide and coming back with at high tide? Or
Just at high tide as the tide turns.
Oh, okay, lovely.
And then but normally the prevailing wind will help you a bit
yes.
as well, whereas you're having to beat into the wind going up.
Yeah.
To do that with other boats and craft, at 2 hours, depending on the tide range, if it's a... it's spring tide, you need to be 2 hours before because there won't be
so
a harbour left.
Yeah, so if there's a big tide that we have every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
yeah.
And then the smaller tides, probably an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And then...
But any tide timetable would show you the heights of the tides.
Yeah,
And if you're unsure, there's people like you to ask.
Yes. Yeah, and if we're not here, there's no tide coming.
So you're always here when there's an appropriate time. That's perfect.
We do a 4-hour duty.
Yeah.
So we do 2 hours before tide and 2 hours after, or thereabouts.
Yeah. And then after that, there's not really enough water to do anything.
No. And then the harbour will be busy while everybody's packing up to leave.
Yes.
And at that point, as they're packing up to leave, we escape if someone get out on the roads.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's perfect. Yeah. That's lovely. Okay, Mike, is there anything else?
Yeah, one of the things that we do is we use RNLI literature with a lot of people that come down. So you've got lots of advice in there. And we won't give it to them when they launch, but as they get off at the end of the tide, we'll look for paddle boarders, we'll look for people that need a kill cord reminder or a life jacket reminder, and we'll use one of the leaflets that you've given us. And
that's
they've been really useful.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I'm glad that we've been able to share, spreading the word to each other.
And it helps us because it's not just us saying it. It's a body that everybody looks up to. So, that helps us as well.
Yeah. No, that's good. It's a synergistic relationship, isn't it? Where, we're getting the word out and you're distributing it as well. Yeah. That's brilliant. That works well. Good. Thank you for that.
So, thanks, Mike. You've covered an awful lot of ground there. I'm going to try and summarise some of the key areas that we've talked about. So, you made the really good point about joining UK Paddle Sport. I think the other name that they're going under is Paddle UK for third-party insurance, as well as information about paddleboarding and kayaking. You made the really important point about if your boat is overloaded, you've invalidated whatever insurance you've got. So thinking about that and being careful. Being wake aware and watching your wash, really important when you're travelling through moored boats where people might be transferring from one boat to another or having a hot cup of tea or whatever it is. In terms of boats, you mentioned four different things to think about. One was to always have an alternative method of propulsion. The second one was to have an anchor so you can lob that over the side if you get into difficulties. The third one was having a means of calling for help and having it in a waterproof pouch, really important. And the fourth one was flotation device, so life jacket or buoyancy aid, whichever is most suitable for the activity that you're doing. The other thing that you mentioned was about inflatables and how you get a lot of inflatables at Brancaster Staithe, and actually they are really affected by the wind, and that's something for people to really take note of before you go out on an inflatable kayak or paddleboard. And the use of local guides and instructors, if you're new either to kayaking or paddleboarding, or if you're new to the area, was a really useful one to try and help get good ideas about where to go safely or more safely, and about the kit that you might need. The other thing that you mentioned about was about a law that was passed in 2023. I've taken the opportunity to have a little look at that, and it's called the Merchant Shipping Watercraft Order of 2023. And basically, it covers any boat that's got an engine, it would appear. So it was introduced to help regulate and prevent dangerous misuse of watercraft. So if you're falling into that category where you've got a boat with an engine, or you've got a jet ski or anything with a motor, that might be one worth looking at. Also, specifically for Brancaster Staithe and Brancaster Harbour, there is a National Trust leaflet, which I will endeavour to put a link with this podcast. There's some really useful launching and general information about the harbour. Okay, well, I hope all of that's been useful for you and helps you enjoy Brancaster Staithe Harbour that little bit more and help to keep yourself that little bit safer. Thank you. Bye.